And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, October 3rd. Thanks for tuning in today. Today you're listening to KTOO FM. Today we have a great show for you. We'll get a preview of tonight's presentation, Modern Slavery, Human Trafficking in Alaska. We'll also talk about First Friday exhibit at the Alaska State Museum with Bob Banghart. We'll talk to Keola Beamer and R. Carlos Nakai about their upcoming Saturday performance. And, of course, as with every Thursday, we'll talk to Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, and more here on Juno Afternoon. But before we get started, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The government shutdown has had some immediate impacts in Indian country. The Associated Press reports the Crow Nation Wednesday put more than 300 workers on furlough, suspending programs that include elderly and disabled home health care, bus services, and irrigation projects. The Montana tribe cited the shutdown and earlier budget cuts as reasons. The White Earth Nation, located in Minnesota, is concerned about its fisheries. According to the Associated Press, tribal chairwoman Irma Visner says next week's lake stocking of sturgeon and other species may be postponed. The restocking includes federal partners. She says the traditional fall lake stocking has a limited window. Short and long-term impacts of the shutdown vary among tribes across the country, depending on their financial resources. Many tribal leaders and national Native organizations are urging Congress to reach a budget deal to uphold the needs of the government's trust responsibility to tribes. Red Cloud Indian School on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota is celebrating 125 years. More than a century ago, Chief Red Cloud lobbied for the school's establishment as a way to help his people. Today, 600 students, grades K through 12, are served by the school. The Catholic institution is administered by Jesuits and Lakota people. Father George Winsenberg, president of the school, says they're celebrating their accomplishments.
Red Cloud supports a system that allows young people to excel intellectually, mature spiritually, and be successful in the future.
Winsenberg says Red Cloud has a nearly 100% high school graduation rate, with many students going on to college, including at universities like Stanford and Dartmouth. Officials point to the school's success because they say it's rooted in Oglala Lakota heritage, including the use of art and language. The school's executive vice president, Robert Braveheart Sr., says the school is an asset to the Oglala Sioux tribe.
Red Cloud is what I would call a bright shining star on the reservation because of our successes. We're a college preparatory institution. We have raised the bar, and we offer a big ray of hope for young people to make a better life for themselves, to have build a better future for themselves.
Officials say many alumni serve their communities both on and off the reservation. A celebration is planned for October 18th. A Tlingit language app has been created by an Alaska Native man for Apple and Android devices. Simon Roberts' Southern Tlingit One app features words like mother and food with pronunciations. Roberts says the project started after he noticed other Native language apps are available, like Navajo and Cherokee. He hopes this one helps in language preservation efforts.
These devices have become tools to our lives, and we're not sharpening our tools for the things that mean most to us, which is our culture.
The app made its debut in August. Southern Tlingit 2 and 3 will soon be available. There are also plans for the Northern dialect. In Canada this week, the First Nations Health Authority assumed the management of services for all First Nations people living on reserves in British Columbia. Services were being handled by the government agency Health Canada. The First Nations Health Authority is the first of its kind in the country. In October 2009, the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians of Montana lost a long fight for federal recognition status. The Bureau of Indian Affairs denied the tribe after a more than 30-year wait. The tribe continues to seek federal recognition. It has gone to Congress to pursue the status through legislation. The tribe is recognized by the state of Montana. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, October 3rd, and thanks for tuning in. To start off our show today, we have a very special guest, Robin Bronin, the director of the Alaska Institute for Justice, in from Anchorage, and talking to us today about the Not My Life is actually a human trafficking movie and also a presentation. Thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. So you are actually work for the Alaska Institute for Justice, and I'm hoping that you can give me a rundown on actually what is, for those people who don't know, what is the Institute for Justice?
The Alaska Institute for Justice is a nonprofit agency, and we provide immigration legal services for low-income Alaskans living throughout our state. And then we also have a language interpreter center where we are training bilingual Alaskans to be interpreters and then providing those interpreters to medical, legal, and social service professionals who are in need of interpreters who understand the ethics of interpreting.
Okay. Wow. And so you're from Anchorage and you're in town actually specifically. Did the Juno World Affairs Council brought in Not My Life, this documentary actually about human trafficking, and you're part of the panel discussion afterwards.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, so, human trafficking has been an issue in our state that at least we are well aware of since Congress passed in 2000, one of the reenactments of the Violence Against Women Act. And that happened in, I believe, October of 2000. And then 2 months later, the first federal prosecution on human trafficking happened in Alaska.
And really? Where?
In Anchorage. It was, we refer to it as the Crazy Horse case because it involved seven young women, two of whom were under the age of 18. And they had been told by their dance instructor, who was from their community in the former Soviet Union, that they would be coming to Alaska to do cultural dances throughout our state. And instead, within hours of arriving in Alaska, they were forced to go to this strip club and dance there.
Wow, and these are just things that I think a lot of Alaskans, we just don't see. I mean, and many Americans just don't even really think about. So it actually happens in our state more than we know, yeah?
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, it's part of that continuum of domestic violence and sexual assault that, you know, we have epidemic proportions of here in Alaska. And human trafficking isn't only about sex trafficking. It's also about labor trafficking. But there's always force, fraud, or coercion that's involved with people who are being forced to do work, whether it be sex trafficking or labor trafficking, that they do not want to be doing.
Right. And so this, so you'll be speaking actually tonight.
Yes.
And the screening begins at 5 p.m. of Not My Life.
Correct, at the Nickelodeon. And the Juno World Affairs Council has done a great job of bringing together a panel of people to speak after the event tonight at the Nickelodeon and then tomorrow night at the Egan Center, the university, the library lecture hall. There will be a shorter version of the movie being shown and a longer panel conversation.
Great. And so that's part of the Egan Lecture Series tomorrow, also at 7 p.m. out at the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS. And then today is actually at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And you'll be speaking on both panels?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. And how did the World Affairs Council kind of connect with you on this issue?
Well, the agency where I work, the Alaska Institute for Justice, is really one of the very few agencies in Alaska that has a wealth of experience in this issue, and we're the only nonprofit that provides immigration legal services. And so we're, I've been coming down to Southeast now for probably about 15 years doing immigration legal services. So folks were well aware of our services and the work that we do with human trafficking victims. And then they worked with the Anchorage World Affairs Council, which is also showing this movie next week, so that there could be a coordinated effort to raise awareness on the issue of human trafficking in our state. And I should also say that the state legislature last year had a human trafficking task force, and those members traveled to Bethel and Anchorage and held public testimony about trying to understand how human trafficking happens and its prevalence. And so this is a continuation of that work.
And so as far as your work specifically goes, so is it, you know, for people who want to, say, get involved and just kind of have more information, what do you think the best course of action for them to take is?
It would be great for them to show up at either the event tonight at the Nickelodeon, which starts at 5 p.m., or tomorrow evening at 7, because that's where we'll have more time to talk about human trafficking in Alaska and the things that community members can do.
Is there, you know, it is, I'm kind of actually sitting here a bit dumbfounded because, you know, I know it happens, but I always think about it happening in other places, not where I live. Is that kind of a common misconception?
I think the common misconception is that it's not happening in my community. And, you know, it's similar to domestic violence, which is invisible, right? It happens behind people's closed doors. And human trafficking is an exponentially more dangerous situation because often organized crime is involved. The forms of power and control that are used are often far more lethal and honestly horrific. And so, which means that the invisibility is greater because the traffickers, this is for profit. Traffickers make an enormous amount of money from this. And so they are quite sophisticated in the ways that they are able to traffic people into our communities and have it be invisible.
Interesting. So it's actually, you know, not a not an easy kind of, it seems actually really complex how to actually make that happen, you know, to traffic humans, really.
Well, I think it's, you know, similar, again, I keep mentioning domestic violence and sexual assault because, you know, it took a long time for us to be aware of the red flags that we should be looking at and to get healthcare providers to ask the right questions and social service providers to ask the right questions. And I would say, you know, this legislation, this federal legislation and the funding that's been made available to address this issue is 13 years in the making, right? And so when you're thinking of domestic violence and sexual assault, I mean, I began working on those issues in the early 80s. So that's several decades. We've only had a decade of really looking at this issue, figuring out what it looks like in our community, because it's not similar to domestic violence where you could say these are the power and control tools. In the limited experience that I've had, you know, over these last 13 years, what I can tell you is that traffickers are really smart and sophisticated, and they think of a myriad of ways to violate, for instance, the immigration laws of the United States. And so we just need to be more sophisticated in the way that we look at it and to know what the warning signs are. So I that's part of what this event is about, is just making people aware that this is happening in our community and that we need to do something about it.
Great. And so those events are actually tonight and tomorrow. Tonight is 5 p.m. with the screening of the documentary Not My Life. It's a human trafficking documentary. And then afterwards, there's a panel discussion, and that's today at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, beginning at 5. And then tomorrow night, as part of the Egan Lecture Series, at 7 p.m. out at the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS. And Robin Brennan, thank you from the Alaska Institute for Justice for coming in and talking to us about this.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
And that was Liz Snyder, a local singer-songwriter, and she's actually part of one half of the Wool Pullers, and they are playing on Tuesday night as part of the KRNN Spotlight Concert Series Dynamic Duos, hosted by Katie Bosler, and we'll hear a little bit more from artists in that show on Tuesday throughout the show today. In the studio with me, I'm very lucky to have Mr. Bob Banghart, and he'll talk to us about the Alaska State Museum. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, so we've got a cool First Friday coming up here, actually tomorrow.
Yeah, we do. And a number of things going on at the museum. We don't really have much shifting in the way of shows this month. There's themed shows that are still up for the summer, which is the Kay Parker's Weavings, Raventail Weavings, and then Tommy Joseph's Armor Show, and then upstairs Nick Galanin's piece, which if you haven't had the opportunity to get in to see all three shows, great compliment. You've got traditional material executed well downstairs, and you got some contemporary spins on the same topics on the upstairs floor, and Nick's work is pushing the boundaries. It's pretty nice.
And aren't those coming down pretty soon?
They are. They're coming down in a couple of weeks. They'll be ending this 2 weeks from now, and then we'll be shifting over for a whole new slate of programs starting in the 1st of November.
Oh, wow, great. So actually, First Friday is a fabulous opportunity. You're seeing art out and about anyway, so swing by the Alaska Museum and check out those final shows before they come down. So what's on the slate for November?
We're starting November 1st with three shows. 10 years of collecting work from the Rasmussen Art Acquisitions Fund. This is where the Rasmussen Foundation put forward about $250,000 annually that the Museums Alaska post director, he took the job over there, Michael Hoffield, and they basically provide funding to museums around the state for purchase of contemporary art from the communities that the artists live in, or just statewide. There are some caveats. It has to be new work and not older than 3 years, and some other recommended opportunities to, I always say they're just basically restrictions, but those are being moved around a little bit. But that show, we've been part of that program for the last 10 years. And so we're going to be putting material on display that we've either purchased through that particular program of artists that have had shows at the museum, or other works that have that we've gone out and sought. And it's, so it's a really interesting overview of the last 10 years of contemporary art in the state.
Oh, that's very cool.
The other is a painter from Ketchikan, Dave Rubin. He's a painter and a sculptor, and really looking forward to his work. He's a great musician as well, and I've played with him a number of times, but he's opening a solo show of painting. And then Dick Benedict, a really fine painter from Juneau, is also having a solo exhibit. So those three things will be opening there. October 25-26, Mark Whitman will be debuting a performance of his, which is called The Birch Brothers, and there'll be more about that later on, but it's essentially a one-man performance that he's put together out of the research and the story on three nefarious individuals called the Birch Brothers that are actual characters, and Mark brings it to life like nobody else in the telling of this history. So,
where will that take place?
At the museum Friday night and Saturday day.
And
be upstairs, and exhibit staff's created a really great little set for him. There'll be live music and behind that. So he'll be talking about that more specifically later in the month, so I'm not going to steal the thunder on that.
Great, yeah.
And then also there's another program the weekend before on the 19th, and it'll be a reading of a play by Mary Lou Spartz on the Sophia, the sinking of the Sophia. So that'd be a play reading. And again, there'll be more information out on that one. So we got a lot of stuff planned for October, and then a real nice swing of shows for November. And so it's just kind of the big push before we close the top floor on January 1st and then close the second floor, the first floor, on March 1st.
Great. And so for those people who are maybe just moved to Juneau and tuning in for the first time, why is the first and third floor? Why are they closing?
Well, we started in January, so we're in our 9th, 10th month of construction on the new State Library Archives and Museum combined facility. The current building is about 24,000 square feet. The new building is 180 if you include the 60-some parking spaces underneath in the basement. And so in order for us to capture that amount of space, the old building will need to come down. So we're right in the middle of rehearsing our processes to collapse exhibits, move them into packing phase, and then get ready to relocate. So between now and between now and March 1st, we're going to be going through and packing both upstairs and downstairs. And after March 1st, there'll be the tunnel that will connect the old building with the new building, which is going up now. What you see being built is the vault. First floor is museum vault. Second floor is archive and historical library vaults. That's one-third of the building,
mm-hmm.
per se.
Okay.
And then we'll be relocating our existing collections from permanent storage to new permanent storage. So we'll have about 6 weeks to make that relocation before they start to mitigate the asbestos and hazmat materials in the old building and remove it. So in order for us to do that in 6 weeks, we have a lot of advanced time and planning to get organized.
Wow, what an epic, epic adventure.
It's fun.
Yeah, I bet.
It really is.
So, and this, you know, a little off topic, but not really. So what does it take to actually pack up your exhibits? I mean, how does that, you just have beautiful and historical, and you know, it's there's so much. How does that work for you all?
Well, it's a real total effort from all the sections of the museum itself: the conservation, exhibits, collections, security. We were lucky enough to get an IMLS grant to bring in 27 museum professionals from around the state that they're going to be training to pack up exhibits. They're going to be facing this in the future, so we wrote up this grant to provide a training opportunity, so we've lined up that up. But essentially, you go in, and we have a couple of people who have experienced in this process in the house, and you cannot overstate very clear and concise organizational structure. It's very much like a command center where you would set up levels of integrated command structure, but absolutely no question as to who to go to for what information and who would be in control of these various aspects. So we take the exhibits and we pack them and catalog them into the transfer mechanism, whether it's a box or a specialty crate, and we stage them so that when they go off exhibit, we know where they are. When they transfer, we know where they are, and when they end up being put back on to either display or into the secure story area, we know where they are. And so it's a constant reaffirmation of both location and condition, three or four stages of that. So it's not overwhelming if you look at it in the sections at which you presented it in a sequence. If it is somewhat overwhelming, if you said, go do it now. So
Yeah, exactly. For people to get more information about the exhibits that are changing over in a couple weeks and also play reading and special two-night performances, where can people get more info?
Well, they can call the museum at 465-2901 or visit the website in the state of Alaska and just go to Alaska State Museum, and it'll take you through. We'll have the events and schedules posted there. We have a cut sheet that's available at the front desk if they want to come in and get more information, something they can put up on the refrigerator.
Great.
Remind them.
Yeah, that's perfect. And it's so nice to actually talk to you now, because I think some people assume because it's under construction that maybe it's not open.
No, not the case. We'll be packed with programming and events all the way through until the 1st of March, at what point we'll then close the doors and begin our long hiatus of relocation and restructuring into the new facility, about 2 years.
That's fabulous. Well, Bob Banghart with the Alaska State Museum, always a pleasure. Thank you for updating us on what's going on.
Oh, thank you so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 3rd of October, 2013. It was on this day, 1895, Stephen Crane's novel, The Red Badge of Courage, was published, the story of a Civil War private, Henry Fleming. It's the birthday of Emily Post, born in Baltimore, 1873, who wrote about etiquette. Emily Post, who said, "Manners are a sensitive awareness of the feelings of others. If you have that awareness, you have good manners, no matter what fork you use." It's the birthday of the novelist Thomas Wolfe, born Asheville, North Carolina, 1900, the youngest of eight children. His most famous novel was Look Homeward, Angel, a thinly veiled autobiography. He was on a trip to Seattle in 1938 when he came down with pneumonia, which turned into tuberculosis of the brain, and Thomas Wolfe died 18 days before his 38th birthday, leaving behind enough material for two new novels, The Web and the Rock and You Can't Go Home Again. And it was on this date in 1849, Edgar Allan Poe was found unconscious outside a tavern in Baltimore. According to the man who found him, he was in great distress and in need of immediate assistance. He'd been en route from Richmond to Philadelphia, and he was found on Lombard Street outside Ryan's Tavern, dressed in dirty, ill-fitting clothing, taken to the hospital, lapsed in and out of a coma, died 4 days later. Because he'd been found outside a tavern, people assumed that Edgar Allan Poe was drunk, and so the temperance movement made an example of him. Poe did have his problems with drink. He was liable to become very ill after only a couple of drinks, but he did have long periods of sobriety. He was aware of his problem. And so there's been speculation about the cause of his death. It was election day, and the tavern was a polling place, and there was a theory that a political gang had kidnapped him and drugged him and beat him and forced him to vote repeatedly at different ballot boxes all over the city. It was a custom at the time. It was called cooping. When Poe was found, his clothes were dirty and didn't really fit him, and he was a man who had always prided himself on his neat and stylish appearance. There's a relatively recent theory that says Poe might have died of rabies. Dr. Michael Benitez, a cardiologist at the University of Maryland, looked at Poe's case and said that first-person accounts of Poe's last days make a strong case for rabies. He was disoriented. He refused water, and hydrophobia is another common symptom of rabies infection. But in the absence of an autopsy report, there is no way to say for sure what caused his death. Here's a poem by Edgar Allan Poe, El Dorado. Gaily bedight a gallant knight in sunshine and in shadow had journeyed long singing a song in search of El Dorado. But he grew old, this knight so bold, and o'er his heart a shadow fell as he found no spot of ground that looked like El Dorado. And as his strength failed him at length, he met a pilgrim shadow. Shadow, said he, where can it be, this land of El Dorado? Over the mountains of the moon, down the valley of the shadow, ride, boldly ride, the shade replied, if you seek for El Dorado. Edgar Allan Poe's El Dorado. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Quercus, publisher of Richard North Patterson's new novel, Loss of Innocence, about a family's collapse amid bitter betrayals. In bookstores everywhere, Quercus, stories worth reading, books worth recommending. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon, and that was R.C. Nakai from his album Canyon Trilogy, and on the phone with me right now, I have R.C. Nakai and Keola Beamer. Hi, Mr. Nakai, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
Great. It's just beautiful music that you play. It's lovely. And I wanted to go ahead and set up kind of what's going on, because you're actually coming down here this weekend.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm.
All right. And so you're a flautist, and I'm wondering, where did you begin, how did you get interested in the flute, and when did you begin playing?
Well, before the military in 1966, I was a brass musician going to Northern Arizona University to begin studies in music. the draft got me. And then after the military in 1972, I found that there was no thought about the continuation of indigenous music on things other than the voice that were being preserved by, you know, American Indian cultures in the Americas. And so I determined I would take this instrument that came by way of, let's say, Northern European peoples to North America and understand it more from a technical basis, and I've been doing that ever since.
Wow. And so are you of Navajo tribe?
Actually, Navajo and Ute and
okay.
Zuni
oh,
and okay. Celtic.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, and so you're playing this Saturday night as part of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council concert series.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in Anchorage right now. Are you on a tour of the state?
Yes, we are, and we just began the first component of the tour here in Alaska, and then we're moving on to Seattle and then Oregon and then Central California and a little break and then over to New Mexico.
Wow. So is this kind of a kickoff of your tour? Have you been touring for quite a bit?
No, this is the kickoff here in Anchorage and then in Juneau. So, you know, we'll be up here and then down in the southeast.
Oh, that's great. And I have a question for Mr. Beamer here coming up. And I'm wondering... Mr. Beamer, how
yeah.
are you?
Yeah, aloha. Nice to hear your voice.
Yes, yours as well. And so you are a slack guitar player.
Right.
And I'm wondering also, kind of the same question I asked RC, is how did you get started? And it seems like to be a long family tradition, music and things, research I did.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really blessed to be in a Hawaiian family whose sort of role in the culture for many generations was either the hula, you know, which is our beautiful native dance form, or education, or, you know, my family was always mostly involved in the world of hula. And as an offshoot to that, the accompaniment for hula, of course, is usually either ukulele or guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So when kids in Hawaii learn to play a musical instrument, it's usually the ukulele because it's pretty, you know, pretty easy and fun and user friendly. And then you know, some of us sort of move on to, you know, more difficult instruments, which is the Hawaiian slack key guitar. You know, so it's a lovely tonality to it, and it's a different way of playing than regular Western guitar because the instruments are tuned very differently. We work in about 40 different tunings. Each tuning has a personality or a color palette, or a sound signature. And the art of the Hawaiian slack key guitar is kind of matching the piece to the interpretation, to the tuning, and then creating an arrangement around it. So it's pretty interesting art form.
Yeah, sounds lovely.
Yeah.
And how did you and RC get connected?
You know, we had both admired each other's work. I mean, I'd heard of RC for many years and loved the kind of spatial feeling of the native flute. And then he also heard my work, so we thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we got together and, experimented and tried something. So I got a call from him, and we ended up recording an album together for Kenyon Records, which is his label in Phoenix. And so we got to be friends, and our wives got to be friends, and pretty soon we were hanging out and playing music, and really, then we started touring together. Music is a wonderful thing because it really brings people together, and that's one thing I'm grateful for in my career is that people are generally happy to see you. It's not like the tax man coming to town, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it usually pulls people together, and we have a great time, and also learn a lot from each other, you know, in this journey where we work together, both honoring each other's cultures and trying to, you know, learn. You know, it was really a very fulfilling journey. So that's also another aspect to music. It's a fine art of collaboration when you work with a gifted artist from another part of the world, as RC is. So, you know, we came up with something we really loved and recorded well, and we're still on our journey together. But this time we got Jeffrey Keyser with us, who's a really brilliant jazz pianist.
Oh, wow.
And also my wife is a very gifted, what we call kumu hula in Hawaii, so she's a hula expert. And so the show also has, you know, some beautiful visual elements to it, you know, outside of the music. So it's a good show.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. It's selling nicely, and people are really looking forward to it. And you can get tickets at all the usual outlets at jhc.org. You can get them at Hearthside, and it's just going to be a fabulous evening on Saturday night. And I had another question for RC.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Let me pass the phone over, but I'll say aloha, and thank you so much, and we look forward to being up there. And also, we have a surprise element in the show.
Oh, really?
With some of the dancers from Junior.
Really?
I'm not saying it correctly, and Juno. And I think you'd be surprised. We've been kind of collaborating over a distance with a little choreography and music, so it should be pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That is going to be great.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a surprise, but I just blew it.
Well, we were going to find out soon enough.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so thank you so much. And I'll pass
nice
it over
to speak with you.
Okay,
sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, RC. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. So I'm wondering, how do you see, you know, I talked a little bit, Tikola, about just the crossover of music there, and I'm just wondering how you see the two kind of cultures blending in a musical way.
Well, I think when I began my studies in cultural anthropology, there was also the realization that we are all components of this circumpolar nation understanding, and when the American Indians moved out of Polynesia and into South America and followed what they call the backbone of the Great Snake or the Andes up into North America, you know, they left behind many components of their culture, but the music and the style of dance and all the different things that were once in the old culture were changed a little bit. So actually we're dealing primarily with the influence of change based on environment and new philosophies that we had to bring together and, you know, all of that. So like for me as an Athabascan, here I am way up in Alaska where we ended up and never made it across, you know. It was at the end of that last ice age. And so we didn't go back into Europe and then back out the other way and see what else was there. So sort of like tourists, you know, we're involved now in seeing what the possibilities might be.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating. And what a great way to explore the possibilities through music.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Arthi, it's such a pleasure to talk with you and Keula about your upcoming concert this Saturday. Really appreciate the phone call. And, yeah, we look forward to seeing you in just two short days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we're pretty excited about this tour because we're following a much longer calendar. And so I think all the communities that will impact on the way, you know, there'll be a lot of interest in developing what they want to be too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're very much looking forward to you, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yes, thank you very much, and we'll see you in a couple of days.
That's right. And we'll go out here, or we'll go into our Keula Beamer here, actually, on CD. Here we go.
And that was R.C. Nakai. And R.C. Nakai and Keola Beamer will actually be here this weekend, this Saturday night, at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium as part of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council concert
series. Escape to Hawaii.
Ooh, really? Nancy DeCherney is here with me with Arts Up. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, yeah, put on your hula gear, and your aloha wear, and come down, and let's just get away from this weather.
Sounds perfect.
Okay, then. Okay.
So it's First Friday. Tomorrow's First Friday of October, everybody.
It is, and it's going to be a really jam-packed one. It's like all of a sudden everybody sprang into
That's why
year.
We call it Rocktober.
Is that what we call it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see. There are a few things still going on. I will just say this once. Last call on God of Carnage, folks.
Last call.
Last call. 2 p.m. Sunday. Okay. anyway, so we've got that. There's an open mic at the Rendezvous tonight, in case you need to do that. So First Friday, before First Friday, at 1:30, there's the Harborview Elementary Hoop Off for World Hoop Day. And that's at the turf field.
Hula hooping?
I don't know. Just said hoop off. I think it's not hula hooping, but
basketball?
It certainly could be.
The basketball?
Suspect
or
so.
Hmm.
But I think we should do all hoops of all kinds. Also on Friday, we have Three Musketeers, Thunder Mountain High School Drama.
That's right.
We got 2 weekends on that one.
Cool.
But it's going to be fun. It's really exciting. Sing On out at UAS. Students of Jean Darman are having a vocal recital.
Ooh.
Out at UAS at 7 p.m. These are all things you could do. That's after the things that you're going to do here in a minute. We're going to talk about Evening at Egan is Not My Life. This is a film that's been showing at Gold Town, and it will show out at Evening in Egan followed with a film discussion sponsored by the World Affairs Council with a grant from the Carlson Foundation. And at 10 o'clock, it's Honky Tonk Habit at the Rendezvous. Okay, so
wait,
here we are.
Honky Tonk Habit's playing at the Rendezvous tomorrow.
That's what it says.
Perfect. Love it.
I know what Shona's going to do. Okay. So here's the roundup, and we'll just go alphabetically. Out at the Alaska Robotics Gallery, which is right on Front Street, they've got work by a cartoonist, internationally known cartoonist Vera Brosgall. It looks very exciting and very interesting stuff. This is your last call on the Alaska State Museum exhibits of the all the armor and all that sort of stuff that's been over there. The Alaska State Library, I think, still has chairs by M.K. McNaughton, but I need to check on that one. The Alaskan Hotel. Okay, they're on the First Friday walk around. You get to see the rooms that have been recently remodeled by the Hotel Impossible people.
Wow.
Isn't that fun?
That's too cool.
They're going to have a little reception, some treats and stuff like that. So they're on, right down there in South Franklin. So
I'm so curious, actually.
Well, so there's where you're
going
to go.
I will be there. That's true.
That's where you're headed. Annie Kales has Cindy Birchfield, and they have some new work by Constance Baltok, and they're calling Friday night, Take Back the Town. So I think they have some special things planned for Friday night. Aunt Claudia's doll, Mary Ellen Frank, has just come back from the Philippines with some new dolls. So she will have those new dolls on exhibit at Aunt Claudia's Doll Museum. That's open on First Fridays from 2 to 7 and on Saturday from noon to 5. It's above Hearthside Books, if you've never been. It's worth a visit.
Mm-hmm.
Bear's Lair has handmade paper by Chris and Andrea of Pause and Reflect. Bear's Lair is located in the Senate Building, and you can also, while you're there, go to the Juno Artist Gallery, where they're having Locals Appreciation Weekend, 15% to 75% off stuff.
I saw a poster, 75% off the Juno Artist Gallery, 15% off guaranteed. That's just
crazy. Yeah, craziness.
I'll be there.
Okay, and they want to point out also, which is, they always have artists in the store when you're there. So it's a fun place to visit, get to know your local artists. Kitan is going to be open with Warm and Cool Fuzzies, Experiments in Wool Felt by Sarah Chatfield.
What's Kitan?
It's a little tiny shop between, it's next to the Imperial and the Five and Dime store, the Ben Franklin store, I think.
Oh, the old
tiny, tiny,
the old jade chap.
Yes.
Tiny little
store.
Okay, cool.
And anyway, stop in there. Fairweather Prints is featuring glass art by Christy Moody, mosaics by Tina Rosa. So there, that down there. Hearthside Books has two books being signed: Treadwell Gold by Sheila Kelly and Gear List of the Golden Moon, Dick Callahan. So two authors will be there, signing books from 5 until 7. Juno Arts and Humanities Council, well, we do have some chaos happening over there.
I'm so excited about your chaos.
So Ryan Conroe has been working busily over there. I have no idea what's going on in there. There's just maps and drawings and spray paint and electricity and stuff.
Theater artists, Nancy, yes. You can't trust them, let me tell you. Theater artists.
It's going to
no
be
good.
Very exciting. So he is doing, there will be a performance piece, basically, as well as an exhibit. So the exhibit will be up all month. The performance piece will be on Friday, and then he will do performances again 2 more weekends, and we'll get the schedule for that. It is one of those things where you don't have to come at any particular time. It sort of comes and goes. It has no beginning, no end. It says come any time that's convenient. So, and in addition to what we have going on in the gallery, we will have the Aware Shelters 5th grade poster contest winners and entrants on exhibit in the main hall. So
cool.
A lot of reasons to come there. First of all, you're going to get your little map when you come there so you know where to go, because you're not going to remember all these places.
Yeah, the First Friday map is crucial to my First Friday experience.
Yeah, you got to have it because there's just too much. Now, this Juneau City Museum has wonderful prints by Dale DeArmond. This is, a private collection that was donated to them. It's called the Hat Series. It's a bunch of prints by Dale DeArmond about hats. And there was a picture of one of them in the newspaper today. So it,
and a great article about Ryan Conroe. We should really pair hats with chairs.
Hats and chairs. Yes.
Monosyllabic art exhibit. Yeah, sure. Okay,
so Mountainside Wellness will also be open. They're up on 4th Street. She'll be demonstrating Alexander Technique, doing Zytoscans, Aromatouch, all sorts of stuff like that. So while you're up there in the museum on 4th Street, go on over to that. Sketch Studio, M.K. McNaughton and Christy Nami Erickson have paper cuts. Sounds unattractive, but but that's, they're edgy, these two.
They're edgy.
And they're beautiful. Pieces of work. So the Silver Bow Backroom has Taku, A River Divided, photography by Chris Miller.
Ooh.
The Canvas is featuring new work by Elise Tomlinson. Her stuff is always wonderful. And the Rookery has photography by Mary Vanderjack. So wonderful week or Friday to be out and about.
Yeah, there's
Duck
so
in
much.
And out.
Everybody's getting back in the swing, so that's great for Rocktober.
And as I mentioned, we've got, there's the acting workshop. The Juno Douglas Little Theater is doing that on Saturday at 1 o'clock out at Nugget Mall. That's free.
That's cool.
We got the Three Musketeers. We got Gold Street Music happening at Resurrection Lutheran Church.
Who's playing?
They didn't give me the list,
okay.
So I don't know. So
I heard a rumor that Costa's playing, Colette Costa.
All right. I think you're accurate with that.
Ooh,
and Tony Tings.
Oh, cool.
Yes. Keola, Real Rock 8 Films from the Edge. It's a Rock Dump's putting that on. It is the 5th annual October Fest for Breasts. The theme is superheroes. That's at the Hangar Ballroom. And Rumblefish is live at the Rendezvous on Saturday night. At Sunday morning, the 5th annual Hasty Half Marathon. It's a 5K run that benefits the school district's running club. Juneau Jumpers are having their tryouts. Oh, look, we've been brought emergency information.
I love it.
The Juneau Jumpers jump rope tryouts is Sunday at 3. This is for kids age 8 and up. And let's see if there's other things that we need. There's something happening over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Spotlight Concert Series.
Yeah.
Want to talk about that?
I do want to talk about that, as a matter of fact.
Right.
At the Karenin, and as a 102.7, a KTO or K3, one of the K3 stations, presents the Spotlight Concert Series, and it's a Dynamic Duos this Tuesday, and that's
Katie Bosler, the fabulous host on Monday night, Katie B. She's hosts an evening of duos, and we've got the Wool Pullers and Liz Snyder. We heard a little bit of music from her earlier. She's 50% of that. We are going to hear from George and Bridget Kuhar.
Always love their music.
Oh, my goodness. Playboy, a.k.a. Playboy Spaceman. And they're just fabulous. They're creative and interesting and, yeah. And then A Soft Old Day, which is Irene Muller, also another young and up-and-coming singer-songwriter with Ian Leonard, and they have a great blend together. And then for a little bit of bluegrass, we've got Allie Kane and Erin Hansen, and those two ladies can really crank out some beautiful sound.
A couple of other things I just want to quickly get in there. Wednesday, the mudrooms begin. That's at 7 p.m. at Northern Light Church. This is the live storytelling thing, so it's always fun, people like that. And on Thursday at the Downtown Library at 5:30 p.m., Ernestine Hayes will be doing an author's talk. So
on Thursday?
Yeah, and that's when the next Ryan Conroe This Hour Forward performance will also be. I just mentioned that for next Thursday because, you know, you get caught
up. I plan way ahead.
Yeah. How are we? So do you want to bring up the Gold Town?
I do. So we got handed the Gold Street Music Concert poster, which I'm really excited. This looks like a great time. The Gold Street Music was actually created by people who lived on Gold Street in the area, and now it's turned into this kind of big concert series that they do once a month in the fall and the winter. And so this Saturday... there's a lot going on. This Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Resurrection Lutheran Church, you can check out Paper Moon, and that's Martha DeFriest, Alan Michael, and Gordon Sandy, John Palms, Colette Costa, that's right, JDHS Sax Quartet. Now, that's going to be pretty cool.
That is wonderful. Those kids are great.
Really? Mm-hmm. I haven't heard them. That's really great. And then Tony Tang's.
Yeah. So there you have it.
Yeah.
So, and I want to mention that there's the new coffee shop right in the neighborhood, Kappa. And it is going to stay open on Saturday night until 10 p.m. So you can be running around and doing all these things and then skitter over there and get your ice cream. The Prospector is going to stay open till at least 10, maybe a little bit later. So you can go out after a show, just like we live in a big city. We get to go out. The Baranoff has their place open. I didn't check to confirm that they'd be open until 11 like they are in the bar sometimes. But, you know, we're just... It's happening, folks.
Is this tomorrow night? He said
Saturday night. Saturday night. I think that Kappa is open Friday night, too, for their being open till 10 o'clock. But definitely they're open Saturday night late. So we got three places at least that you can go and have fun with your friends after your shows.
Juno getting all fancy.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I love it. And Nancy, so we did just talk to Keila Beamer and R.C. Nakai about the concert this weekend. And I have to say Keila Beamer did tell us about a little surprise that was happening.
Oh, good. Shouldn't I know?
Maybe he's trying to surprise you, so I won't say anything. Nothing bad's going to happen.
Okay, good. Okay. But we do have the hula group from here is going to be performing, which is going to be really delightful to see all these ladies, people you know, dancing. It's fun.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. So as far as that concert series, can you tell, the Jack series, what's mm-hmm. next on the calendar so we can plan ahead?
Well, we have a secret thing that we hadn't told anybody about because we weren't sure about it.
Lots of secret surprises going on today.
Okay, it's all secret. Well, there is I don't exactly know how to describe her. She's a fabric sculptor puppet performance artist named Shasha Higby, S-H-A-S-H-A. Look her up on Google so that you get a sense of it. We're bringing her in November, the middle of November. She'll do workshops on working with fabrics and doing these crazy things to get ready for wearable art. So that's a little secret thing that wasn't in our brochure. And then we have Hit the Jackpot, and then we have the two guitar trios, the California Guitar Trio with the Montreal Guitar Trio is coming in December or in January. Of course, wearable arts.
Coming right
up
around
there.
The corner.
We got to get organized.
That's
don't
right.
You
yeah, totally. I'll get on to that. Well, yeah, thank you so much, Nancy DiCerno.
All right.
Nancy DiCerno, for giving us Friday Arts Up. And thank you so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon, KTOO. And coming up next, a little bit of news. Thanks very much and have a great day.
This was a lengthy pursuit. There were multiple vehicles that were rammed. There was officers that were struck. And